Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Patrick Brennan of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And, Patrick, we were expecting the much-awaited Hobby Lobby decision from the Supreme Court today. That, as well as a key organized labor case coming down now on Monday, the court says. But we did get two decisions today that both qualify for the good martini. One is that the Supreme Court, both of these were unanimous, by the way, but in one, the court struck down a 35-foot buffer zone outside abortion clinics in the state of Massachusetts, saying it was a violation of free speech. Also by unanimous decision, although there were a couple different concurring opinions, 9-0, the court ruling that the president was unconstitutional in making recess appointments when the Senate was not technically in recess, but was rather having pro forma sessions. They're saying essentially, as the Constitution does, that only the Senate, not the president, gets to decide when the Senate is in recess, which is, of course, a novel concept. So how big are these wins today for conservatives?
I think they're both big. One thing it's nice when they're when you get these unanimous decisions, not just because it sort of gives the decision a little more import, but also because it reminds there's kind of you hear this a lot more from the left than the right, that the court has been so politicized and so it's being, you know, used to hold back what the people want or what the president wants. Most of these cases are not all that controversial, which goes to show just how ridiculous Obama's appointments were and how ridiculous this Massachusetts law was, which on its face may not sound terrible, but there's a very clear precedent that you can't regulate the content of speech. So the fact that, you know, people could stand outside the abortion clinic and praise Planned Parenthood but couldn't counsel against people going to Planned Parenthood was obviously just a massive. So the unanimity of them underlines just how dramatic these abuses were.
One of the interesting questions now is what happens to not only the three National Labor Relations Board appointments the president made, but any decisions those folks made. I don't know if you've done any research or reading into that, but is that all null and void, or do we just say, okay, you can't do it after now?
I don't know. I think that they were on the board for, so Obama then sort of made other appointments, but they're on the board for a year and a half or something. And I think my understanding is that the court, thankfully, properly, is not going to adjudicate that. But I don't know exactly how that gets shaken out. I'm not sure anyone knows right now, but they've made some bad decisions in that time, I'm sure. So it would be nice if some of them were declared void.
Saw a tweet shortly after the recess appointment decision by Amanda Carpenter, who works in the communications department for Senator Ted Cruz. I can't remember the exact number she had in her tweet, but she says this is, I think, like the 12th time that the court has struck down an administration effort to expand its power. So it's not the first time that the administration, even with two appointees on this court, getting struck down on an issue of executive power, and both of them ruling against the president today, in addition to the seven other justices. On to the bad martini now, Patrick. And this has been a bad martini pretty much all week, with the exception of Trey Gowdy's evisceration of IRS Commissioner John Koskinen earlier in the week. And now it turns out that it's not just Tea Party organizations that the IRS had its crosshairs aimed at. This, according to the Wall Street Journal, House Republican lawmakers said a retired Internal Revenue Service official, Lois Lerner, of course, raised the possibility of auditing Republican Senator Charles Grassley, a senior lawmaker and former chairman of the powerful Finance Committee, over a group's offer to pay for his wife in connection with a speaking engagement. The allegation is likely to heighten congressional interest in Ms. Lerner's emails, which have been important to an investigation into IRS treatment of politically active nonprofit groups, particularly since it emerged that emails from 2009 through mid-2011 were lost in a computer crash. Lawmakers said a new email from 2012 shows that Ms. Lerner, who retired last year, considered initiating an audit into the Iowa lawmaker after inadvertently receiving his invitation to an event to which both were invited. Mr. Grassley was one of 12 GOP senators who signed a letter earlier in 2012 urging the IRS to conduct probes of Tea Party groups in an even-handed and transparent manner amid worries over possible IRS targeting. So hard to know exactly what the rationale was here, but it doesn't make the motives of Ms. Lerner and the IRS seem any more pure than we already thought they were.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it suggests just the worst about Lerner that, I mean, we don't really know if this in particular is evidence of abuse of power because it's kind of unclear what the context was, what she was actually suggesting, you know, kind of. But the idea that she said, boy, I don't really want to go to this event with Chuck Grassley. Why don't we have someone look at his political operation or this, you know, the hosts of this event is just the most vindictive, personally vindictive behavior, it seems. Just totally bizarre. And kind of scary, too.
Do you think this will take on a different tone of the investigation, or is there already enough for lawmakers to sink their teeth into here?
I don't know. So there's sort of a secondary kind of a leftover bad martini here for conservatives, which is that one of the problems, it seems, is when the House Oversight Committee and a bunch of the House committees investigating the IRS have dealt with this, they're not very good. They just drop this piece of news without explaining how it fits into the larger investigation. So the press release accompanying these documents was two paragraphs, and it didn't offer any sort of details about, and I've heard from a lot of, I don't do a lot of reporting myself, but from a lot of reporters who work with groups like the House Oversight Committee, I think this came out of Ways and Means, but I'm not positive, that they don't do a good job of explaining to reporters, even off the record, of saying, like, look, here's how we think this is going to play into the investigation. And that's so that they do a terrible job of relating to the media. And these are really complicated scandals. And so that's absolutely necessary. And so it's hard to say because we don't really – okay, well, look, it looks bad. She was basically recommending that someone get audited here, kind of. But it's hard to say. And I think that Republicans in Congress have, that shouldn't be too hard to try to have better relations with the media to explain these things, because otherwise the media is not going to run with these stories.
All right. On to the crazy martini now. And as has been pretty much every day this week, we badly need the levity. Patrick, just so you know, we did not find a third crazy martini from Mary and Barry on Wednesday. So the streak was over anyway. So we're not doing anything that's depressing here in terms of shutting down the Mary and Barry streak. But this is a lot of fun. This is from Time Magazine. North Korea's leader is not pleased with the latest film from funny men Seth Rogen and James Franco, in which the pair play assassins pretending to be TV newscasters in order to kill the North Korean president. We just happen to have a couple of clips here.
You are entering into the most dangerous country on Earth. Kim Jong-un's people believe anything he tells them, including that he can speak to dolphins.
You want to go kill Kim Jong-un?
Totally. I'd love to assassinate Kim Jong-un. It's a date.
A Kim spokesman called it an act of war. The government of North Korea not pleased with the film, called The Interview, calling it a wanton act of terror. The movie is slated for release later this year. The North Korean government has promised a quote-unquote merciless retaliation against the United States if the movie is released, calling the film an act of war. In a statement published by the state-run news agency, a spokesman said the film is the work of gangster movie makers and is a wanton act of terror. The act of making and screening such a movie that portrays an attack on our top leadership is a most wanton act of terror and act of war, and is absolutely intolerable. Patrick, is this going to make you want to see The Interview a whole lot more than you would have otherwise?
Well, I'm going to have to express some sympathy with the wording, at least, of North Korea's objections, that if you watch the whole trailer, the movie does look terrifyingly and intolerably bad, and which is a real shame. But maybe the movie itself would be good, but the trailer is not heartening, which is a real shame, because dictator humor, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the best kinds of humor. The Sacha Baron Cohen's movie, The Dictator, a lot of people thought was sort of dumb, but I thought was quite funny. And just the kind of the foibles of the egomaniacs who run places like North Korea, it's tragic, but there's some real humor in the tragedy as well. So it's too bad that it doesn't look that good, because it's a topic ripe for parody.
You're a Team America guy, aren't you?
Yeah, right. Well, and the thing is, so look, the Soviet Union was big on – victims of communism were huge on Soviet jokes. It's like an entire genre of humor. And so if they can laugh about it, then if we can laugh about the Soviet Union, we can laugh about North Korea, I think.
Definitely. You got to love their reaction to it. And I think the part about him being able to speak with dolphins probably is part of their propaganda. I mean, they talk about
– oh, yeah.
His dad had like 11 holes in one the first time he played golf and all this other stuff. It just
super, yeah, he shot like a 19.
Yeah. Superhuman feats, and they've got no exposure to the real world over there. So a decent chunk of them probably do believe it. So be glad we don't live there, and we can at least laugh at it a little bit, and hopefully some good news will happen for real in North Korea at some point. Patrick, great to have you with us. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Patrick Brennan of National Review, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to join us on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.